Now it is my pleasure to introduce Michelle. I absolutely love this woman. She tells it how it is, and I cannot wait to hear what she has to say. So, Michelle, come on up.
Hello, I'm Michelle, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Michelle.
All right, your cell phone goes off, goes buzz, I'm going to get you. I am so addicted to my cell phone, I have to leave it in my car, you know? And I figure for 1 hour, I can focus, maybe. Thank you so much for asking me to speak. It's always an honor and a privilege to ask to be doing anything in Alcoholics Anonymous. I think probably the most important job in AA is making the coffee. You know, I've been to some meetings that they've not had coffee, or you have to, like, pay $5 for coffee, but thanks whoever made the coffee, most important job inside AA. Want to start off with a little bit of a joke. It's an AA joke. It's a great, I don't know. I was told I'm a parrot. So this sponsor is getting ready to die. And this pigeon, or you call them sponsorees, whatever. Anyway, this pigeon says, look, I need to know. I know you're going to die. I need to know if there is heaven, if there's AA in heaven. I need to know. Sponsor says, I'll let you know. So sponsor dies. Next day he comes back. He says, well, I can answer your question. I have good news and I have bad news. The good news is there is AA in heaven. The bad news is Saturday night you're speaking. I was, as you can tell, I'm not from the South. The accent that you hear is part Northern, part Canadian, and a smidge of Wichita, Kansas. Polish Catholic, so I was ordained to this. You know, we drink all the time. What it amounts to is we moved every 2 years. My father believed in geographical cures. If it's true about alcoholism being an inherited disease, I still believe in all my heart. My father gave me the best gift because I wouldn't know God through AA. I wouldn't have these 12 steps or these 12 traditions. I would just be existing. So don't take away that excuse for you. I have a solution now. I knew I was a problem. I always knew I was a problem. I was born one of five kids. I felt lost. You know, that square peg being thrown in a circle, you know, and I just didn't fit anywhere. My thing was, how do people do this, like get up and like do life? It wasn't too far before I started drinking. My sobriety date is November 17th, 1986. I know, me too. I have no idea. I came here, I have one sobriety date by the grace of a loving God, and it's my only one I need. When we pass out the chips, I say to myself, do you want to, you know, they say, do you want to white chips? I'm like, no, one was enough. One was enough. It is not a requirement for membership for you to go out again and again and again. I'm sorry that you do. I'm grateful that you made it back alive. But if you keep doing that, playing a game, baby, you're not going to come back. You will die. I've been here for 39 years. I have a black dress. I don't look good in it. I don't look in it at all. I would rather go to one of our funerals in AA, people who have passed on to glory. That means they passed away sober, you know, and it's a party if you've ever been. It's a great party to remember when. But I'm 61 years old, and I'm standing here going, holy, I have 39 years of sobriety. How did this happen? I went to my sponsor, and I used my sponsor. And she says, well, you didn't drink, and you're not dead. That's how you get it. Last Saturday, we made the trek up to Ellijay. That's where my sponsor is. And we helped her celebrate 53 years of sobriety. I had to look at that chip. It had an L on it. It has an L on a chip. And I'm like, holy crap. So maybe you can do it too. Just don't drink it. Don't die. I remember the first time that I drank. And I remember the last time that I drank. Boone's Farm Wine. The alcohol of middle schoolers. But I drank way before that. So I remember a girl in the neighborhood. We went somewhere and we were drinking. And it was Tickle Me Pink or Strawberry Hill or whatever. And I remember cracking it open. And I remember taking a big old swig. See, I can sound Southern. Swig. Big old swig. Something happened. I mean, alcohol went over my tongue into my system. It was like, bam! I put 10 foot tall and bulletproof. It was like alcohol reached in, scratched that itch. And I was able to breathe. My next thought was, give me some more. And there never seemed to be enough. It was like, my only thought was, what do I need to do? Who do I need to screw over? Just let me know. There never was enough. And that's what I did. I did other things too. We're going to call it Avon. Avon and Mary Jane, but we'll get back to it. But I just drank all through middle school. I went to my 30th class reunion a while back. I wanted to meet the people I went to high school with. I've never met them, you know. And I drank all through high school, and I dealt in Mary Kay and Avon Cosmetics a lot. So I remember graduating high school. I had the diploma, but I don't remember it. It was a blackout. I was just a blackout drinker. That's just what we did. And my parents always had alcohol in the house. So, of course, you know, like we all do, you know, add water to Jack Daniels and, you know. But in high school, what I noticed was I would go to, there was a place, I grew up in Gwinnett County. There was a place called the Promised Land. And it didn't matter how old you were. All you had to do was slip them a 20, and you could get anything you wanted. It just, that's what I did in high school. I drunk drive. That's my favorite sport. That's exactly what I did. I hit, in Lilburn, there's a highway, and I hit the same telephone pole within the 6 months period. And I totaled out two cars hitting the same telephone pole right in front of McDonald's. And still didn't think there was a problem, you know. It was that, I used to get drunk and do other things and then race on the streets. And I thought that tickets, when you got tickets, they came in a cluster, like speeding, reckless driving, looting, or hitting a DeKalb County police officer. They really don't like when you do that. They really don't like it. I don't know if I did it or not. I mean, it became normal to just drink and wind up a couple days later, you know, and end up this place and end up that place. I did try Shine one time. That was the problem. I just, you know, it was that jar. It was clear. I didn't understand. That was the problem. By the time I graduated high school, the way I drank was, I got a fifth of whatever it was, took off the top and threw away the top. I don't understand the top thing. You know, I still don't understand that. And I just drank. Strange series of events. I don't remember anything from the time I was 17 to the time God rendered me sober. God rendered me sober. I did not say, one day I'm just going to stop drinking, we're all going to get an AA and be spiritual, you know? If you're like me, if you're an alcoholic like me, you just fall through the freaking doors. If you're not dead, I mean, I tried prison, good drugs in prison, but you just kind of fall through the doors. This is it. This is the last house on the block. If I pick up today, I will die, and I will die alone, and I can't take any of you with me. You know, this is a disease of denial. It's the only one I know of that says I don't have it. I came in through the doors of AA, and I don't know how long I lived on the streets. It was cold, and then it was hot, and then it was cold. And strange series of events, I ended up at my folks' house. Now, with good right, I was an alcoholic, tornado through people's lives, garden variety. I was not welcomed in my folks' house for a long, long time. I did a lot of damage. With my siblings as well. A lot of emotional, spiritual, and physical. Believe it or not, I was not a 9-to-5 cocktail drinker. So one of my period of time was I would take a bath in a sink and go to a bar and pick up whatever it was. Didn't matter if it was a man or a woman, it didn't matter. And take it home, and when they passed out, I'd rip it off. You know, pawn off. You know, you knew what you picked up when you picked me up in the bar. And it's your fault. Nothing was my responsibility. Isn't that funny? I didn't say to myself, when I grew up, I want to live underneath a bridge in Atlanta. You know, I want to be an alcoholic. This is what I want in my life. You know, I came from the right tracks. I mean, my mother was a good Catholic grandmother, a good Catholic, you know. You just don't do these things, you know. Went to confessional out and lied my ass off. Whatever. You know, Hail Mary, full of grace, whatever. Say whatever. It just didn't make any sense. Nothing made sense. So I just drank and drank and drank. I was 22. I can't be an alcoholic. I'm a female. I can't live on the streets of Atlanta. I can't be a street bum. I grew up in an alcoholic home, but we had food and shelter. I can't be an alcoholic. No. Okay, so my father's an alcoholic, and my grandfather is, and on my father's side and my mom's side, alcoholism and the disease of addiction runs rapid. Those of us who are in a 12-step program, we kind of joke, either you're still in your active addiction or you've died of it, or you're in some 12-step program. You know, that's a choice. I have a niece that's still out there, my oldest niece, and I hope and pray, but I don't have a crystal ball. She has tried this program and said, nope, not for me. Okay. You know, if you want it, come get it. I grew up in an AA. I was one of those alcoholics that I needed medical attention. So I ended up in Buford, Georgia, at a treatment center. And I didn't have any money or anything, and went over to my folks' house, and this is so bluff. My father said, okay, you know, you just stay here for 2 weeks and we'll help you. I'm thinking, you have no idea. See, the last 3 or 4 years, by the grace of a loving God, they didn't experience anything. I just went away. And I'm so grateful for that, because it was enough going to high school. You know, it was enough disappearing for weeks on end and having some guy drop me off and my mother would pick me up. And I mean, how do you make an amends for that? I'll tell you in a few minutes. I mean, there's nothing pretty about my alcoholism when I drank. It was cold and dark and lonely. And it was nasty and dirty. When God rendered me sober, I thought I was too dirty for Alcoholics Anonymous. If you actually knew what I did when I was out there, you'd ask me to leave. Because that's what I got used to. I'm sorry, you're not allowed in this bar. You know, remember last time? No, I don't. I really don't. I mean, I was 3 years sober before I figured out I was a blackout drinker. You know, I just didn't know. I thought that this is how you drink. So I ended up over at the medical center in Buford, and I was walking along the walls, you know, the heel toe, because if I walked to the middle, I'd fall over. And it was like 14 or 15 days, and I figured something out. Very important. There's no handles on the inside of the doors. You couldn't get out. I didn't know. That's how long, I mean, I'd just been there, you know. First time that I had something to eat, I remember it just hurting my mouth. And then I remember standing at the nurse's station, just standing there trying not to fall over. And this woman comes running down the hall. She says, Rebecca of Sunnybrook Farms. And she's going to give me a hug. Welcome to LA. And I'm like, you know, alcohol ripped me from me. There's nothing left. I saw every human being as an enemy. What do you want? The only purpose in you guys is so I can rip you off. And I wanted more cosmetics and more alcohol. There was this hole in my soul and nothing could fill it up. It didn't matter what I did. It didn't matter what I did out there. I just walked around with this hole. So anyway, so I went to this halfway house because there was no place else for me to go. And then I ended up at 8111. These women were still driving cars, like Mercedes-Benz, and they had purses, and they were dressed, and they were clean. I just thought that they kind of hurt their family's feelings and ended up in AA. And they just didn't know how to drink. That's why they were there. And I just didn't, you guys aren't really alcoholics, you know. And I was going there for a couple of days, and one of the older women with pearls, she had pearls up. You know, if I hawk those right now, I'd get about $40 for them. That's how my mind, the insanity. You know, if I hawk those right now, how much can I get? The insanity of ours, the disease. She pulled me aside after me, and she says, baby, I think there's a place that you would fit a little bit better, you know, than this 8111. That's okay. She said, there's this place called Clarkston. I'm like, okay. She says, you know, this is the bus, you know. Oh, MARTA means moving alcoholics rapidly through Atlanta. I met some of the coolest people riding the buses, you know, because you always carry your chips and make sure they're hanging so everybody can see them, you know. Oh, yeah, I'll sit next to them because they're carrying the chips, you know. But I was like 60-some-odd days in the program, ended up over at Clarkston. This is when we were in Scottsdale Mill. I fell through the doors in a time when there was no multiple choice. Nobody ever asked me to make the coffee. Nobody ever asked me to do anything. Because if they would have asked me, I would have said, hell no. Get away from me. If they would have said, well, you can do this, this, and this. I'm not doing shit. I'm just going to sit in the back. You know, I'm going to sit in the back and play with my... Get away from me. And so, there was a Wednesday night women's meeting. And they, back then, if you didn't have a sponsor in the meetings, they said, anybody doesn't have a sponsor, raise your hand. I was just stupid enough to raise my hand. I didn't know what one was, you know. And everybody was looking at me, and some of the women were like, go the other way. So there was like three or four women in the corner after the meeting. You know what they were doing? They were arguing about who was going to be my sponsor. Because you remember, I was fairly hip and terminally cool. 22 years old, you know? And then this one person came over and gave me a quarter and said, I lost, I'm going to be your sponsor. And I'm like, okay. And he says, when you get home, call me. I was real busy. You know, newcomers are real busy. We have lots to do, you know? Lots to do. And that's what I told him. I'm sorry, I don't think I'm going to have the time to call you. Turns around and looks at the group over there. She thinks I asked something of her. She thinks I actually asked her to call me. They start cracking up laughing. And I'm like, what's funny? I just didn't get it. She says, when you get home, you pick up your phone and you call me. I'm not asking you. You will do this. Oh, shit. Okay. 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 And then we all have this person. We had Justine. She's recently passed. Scared the shit out of me. I made the mistake one time. That's all it took. I was talking to somebody. I was like in third row or something like that. I was talking to somebody while How It Works was being read. And I was talking to him like I'm talking now. And all of a sudden, somebody hit me in the back of the head. I was whipped from my head. I stood up, and Justine says, you need to shut the fuck up. And I was like, whoa. If you didn't use profanity when I was a newcomer, I didn't understand what you were saying. She says, give respect to How It Works. Don't talk. Listen. Okay? And I knew she was telling me the truth. Just like she told me, I had to be there every Wednesday night at 7 o'clock to make the coffee. Every Wednesday night. If I wasn't there, we couldn't have an AA meeting. And I was just sick enough to believe her. So I did it for 3 years. I made the coffee every Wednesday night for 3 years. There was one night, oh God, I was really sick. I wasn't bullshitting her. I called her up, and I said, Justine, I'm sick. I have the flu. She says, well, you got to go to the meeting. I said, well, I got a temperature. And she's like, well, I'll do it this time, but you got to make it the next time. You know, and I just marted it through. I lost my license. Georgia decided it'd be best if I didn't drive. I never got a DUI. I wrecked a couple cars. Okay, I wrecked 9 cars. You know, drinking and driving. Points, stuff like that. So I just didn't understand. I mean, I had my license. Why do you mean it's suspended? I still have it. I just didn't understand. And then they get really, really, DeKalb County gets really knotted up when you start running from them. I see blue lights, I run. It became habit, you know, just like the paranoia and the, you know, the chaos and confusion, the drama. It just became normal. So I just marted it through. And so after the halfway house, I got a job, my first sober job, at Kroger's, part-time. And I put groceries in the grocery bags, part-time at Kroger's. I couldn't figure out why the eggs were breaking all the time. Eggs go on the top. I didn't know. I thought they went on the bottom. I just didn't know. And so these are things that alcohol ripped me for me. I just had, like, no common sense. And my sponsor. They are a person that's been sober longer than me. They are not my bank, my marriage counselor, my attorney, my God. They're an AA member that have worked the steps, and they've been sober longer than me. And there's something that I want. I'm not smart enough to pick my own sponsor. I really am not. I've only had 3 women sponsors since God turned me sober. And God just puts a woman in my life, and that's it. So, I mean, I sponsor guys, too, and it just stays sober, you know? It doesn't matter to me. I'll go to any lengths to stay sober, you know? Well, after the meeting, we were talking. My sponsor realized that I didn't know about the feminine stuff, you know, like taking a shower every day, you know, living on the streets, brushing your teeth, you know, shaving your legs, stuff like that. I just didn't know. So we went to a store and bought all these different things, and I had to learn how to brush my teeth again. There's alcohol with me for me. Some of us come in negative numbers, okay? Mm-hmm. But when we get to zero, we start growing a lot. When I was a year sober, I remember how I felt. I couldn't speak. I'd gone to over 300 meetings my first 90 days. I hit out in 88 my first year. Nothing wrong with that. I have 39 years. Worked for me. I just, if the doors were open at Clarkson, I was there. I remember how I felt. I actually did something. 365 days, I didn't drink at all. Not even on weekends. You know? I didn't drink. I didn't chug any scope. That was my thing, too. Perfume, didn't do any of that. You know? And I went to a meeting almost every day. And people in the program that had businesses, they would employ me. There was this one woman that employed me to paint. I had no idea how to paint. But she would pick me up before work. We'd go, she'd take me out to breakfast, and then we would go paint a house or whatever, and then we'd stop, go to a new meeting, and eat while we're going there, and then she'd drop me off at home, and then somebody else would pick me up and take me to a 9 o'clock meeting. That was my life. That's what I did. Couching on people's couches. My sponsor told me that if you're asking for a ride, she said, be outside waiting for them. Don't let them wait. Don't let them wait in the driveway. So I was out there, like, waiting in the driveway. At about 6 months of sobriety, a woman realized something wasn't right with my reading. Because I learned real quick and in a hurry, memorize how it works, 12 traditions and promises, and how to give out the chips. Because I was told I couldn't say no. I couldn't chair meetings yet. A little bit still shaky. But she asked me if I could read, and I said, well, yeah, sure. And she asked me to read something in the big book, and I couldn't read. And so what the women did, not AA, but the women, we would meet an hour before, and they just read me the first 164 pages. And they answered my questions. And then they told me to go over to Biscayne Thursday night at 8 o'clock and sit next to this lady named Maggie. And she will teach you how to, you know, understand the big book a little bit more, like little snippets, instead of just a sentence at a time. And I noticed sitting in that big book study for over 4 years, she never asked me to share. I have stuff to say. And she would just, baby, just, sponsor told me, you're supposed to sit next to me and just shut the hell up. Okay. You know, I was just sick enough to believe them that if I got to the meeting early, there was some kind of a meeting going on. And then afterwards, clean the ashtrays, you know, and clean up and stuff like that, and it was free sobriety. They promised me that if I made the coffee, that I wouldn't get drunk doing it. And I believed them because I had nothing else to believe in. This God thing, I don't know. Laura T., she's one of the most spiritual women I've ever met. She's passed on to glory. She taught me about service work. And Saturday morning, we'd go over to Clarkston, we'd clean the toilets and clean Clarkston. That's what we did. And then we stayed for the meeting. That's what we did. And I was cleaning the toilet one time, and she's like, walking by, so how's your God? I'm like, who? You know, come on, living on the streets, there's not a lot of time other than, God help me! In the porcelain God, if there was something there. So she said, okay, we're going to talk to your God. Like, oh, crap, okay. Okay. So she got down on her knees next to me, and I'm like, okay. and the room seemed real big, and it seemed like huge. And then she started talking to this God thing, and all of a sudden the room started getting warm, and I felt like something was listening, you know? And that was my first experience. I've had several million burning bushes and several miracles. My miracle is November 17th, 1986. That's my miracle. I thought I was going to die till May 11th. You know, I was not going to make it to 23. You know, woman wrapped around telephone pole. You know, we watched the news. I had no idea. At 2.5 years of sobriety, I thought about killing myself every day. This is after a 4-step. I went to my sponsor because my sponsor is the best sponsor in the whole wide world. If you don't feel the same way about your current sponsor, you need to get another sponsor. Okay? And I went to her and I said, look, I'm kind of thinking about this, you know. You're getting better, baby. You're not thinking about drinking. She turned around and walked off. I'm like, motherfucker. That is not what I... And then this other woman came up and said, okay, this is what we're saying, is you know that if you drink, you're going to die. If you do other things, you're going to die too. So you know that's not the solution. So you think about this, but you can't do that. Don't worry, it'll go away. Okay. And it did. I met my rival on the streets when I had about 4 or 5 years of sobriety. She sold, let's say, Avon, and I sold Mary Kay. And I don't know if I ever shot at her. I don't know. I made amends to her, and I know she shot at me one time. She never made amends. No, she made amends. But we respected each other, you know, and we would always joke about each other, you know, that she sold Avon and I sold Mary Kay, and we just split Atlanta in half, you know, and that's what we did. But it was funny, sitting in meetings with her all these years, listening to her talk, you know. She recently passed on to glory. She was so funny. Oh, my God, she had such a humor. God wrote her sober, and she's smarter than that. You know, just funny, funny, funny. At 5 years of sobriety, I believe ego returned. Because, see, I got 5 years now. I teach you how to stay sober. I had a lot of pigeons. Oh, a pigeon. Carrier pigeon. I give you this message, and you carry that same message. It's a carrier pigeon. It's a compliment. Okay? I was 30 years sober when my current sponsor called me a pigeon, and I about cried. You know, it's a compliment. I'm carrying the same message. I go over to Carson, me and my ego. Yeah, I was about to eat. Yeah. And a whole bunch. And Jess Caden yanks me over. You don't need to sponsor anybody anymore. Well, I got 5 years. So what? But I have 5 years. Okay, so, and make the coffee. When's the last time you cleaned the ashtrays? These women kept me in check. I would sit in meetings with these women that had more time and progress than I'd been alive. I learned about service. I learned how to be of service. The cool thing is that I have been every trusted server position on the group level at least twice, and I've been down to a DCM. The most important thing about AA in service is it's icing on the cake. Cake is the program. Icing is the service work. You know, if anybody here is a GSR or a DCM, my hat is off to you. You know, 10% of the people do 90% of the work. You know, that's just how life goes. If you get an opportunity to be a service, I like the spirit of rotation. 2 years, you GSR or whatever, and then you rotate out. And then you rotate out. You don't rotate back into another position. At 10 years, I got double digits. Saint Michelle. Yeah. Saint Michelle. You know, I'm getting older, you know. 10 years. Ooh. They would come by and just pat me on the head. Keep coming back. You'll get this stuff. I'm like, ooh. In the year 2000, I had major back surgery. And these same women that would tell me to make the freaking coffee and chair this meeting and do that and do this, and we're gonna pick up somebody and we're gonna take them to a meeting and we're gonna take them to detox. Okay. I had major back surgery, and they were there to wipe my butt and wipe my nose and shave my legs and everything. And they got me out of the bed and they walked me, stuff like that. April 29th, In the year 2000, my baby sister died of this disease. She had 19 months. There are those, too, who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. She did not have the capacity. She had 19 months, and God took her with His grace, took her quickly, and I will forever be grateful. And these same women that kept on patting me on the head and stuff like that, they wouldn't leave me alone. I mean, they would not leave me alone. Barbara would sit next to me and go, "Baby, it's okay, just don't drink. You can cry." I mean, I would just be sobbing in the meetings. I'd never lost anything like this. You know, I'd never cared about this. With me, there's a lot of different definitions in all of our literature. For me, alcoholism, when I ingested alcohol and other things, I lost the ability to care about anything or anybody or anything. Didn't matter. That's me. And I cried and cried and cried, and like, "Just don't drink, just don't drink." And I asked my sponsor at the time, Janice, I said, "What am I supposed to do?" She said, "You go up to Ella J, and you make breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and you get her children up out of the bed, and you get them dressed for the day. And it doesn't matter if anybody eats breakfast, lunch, or dinner, you're going to bring some kind of normalcy. And then you're going to go to AA meetings." Now, see, my roots were at Clarkston in the city. Ella J is in the mountains. And I'm thinking, ooh, this is going to be interesting. Here I come, the city girl. So that's what I did for 2 weeks. And when I went to these meetings, I noticed that they had the 12 steps and the 12 traditions, and I just got in there and got a cup of coffee. The women were like, just like, you know? And it was just a roundup like we do. You know, there's no cliques. You know, we all hang together, you know? And they're like, "It's okay." And I told them what was going on. And then I went back to my folks' house, and all of a sudden, all these plates of food started coming. And just plates and plates of food and flowers from AA members. And I kept on answering the door. I mean, it's, the women in the fellowship in AA, but the women in the fellowship here. And these cards kept on coming in, these flowers kept on coming. And my mother's like, "I can't answer the door anymore." I said, "Mom, I'll do it." And she said, "Well, who's that from?" "Oh, it's from somebody in the program that knew Chris." "Oh, it's somebody in the program that knew Chris." She knew a lot of people. Yes, she did. You know, my mother asked me that question. We were sitting up one night drinking coffee, and she said, "Why did your sister die of this disease and you are sober?" I paused. "Is that thing about God doing for us what we cannot do for ourselves?" I said, "I don't know. When I get to heaven, I'm going to have to ask God." I didn't say that. You know what I mean? It's like some things that I say and do. That was my first, like, "Oh my God, I sounded wise, but it wasn't me." You know? And I was just sitting. It's like, okay, now I understand. There are so many things. I was a year and a half sober, and I was sitting over at Clarkston, and this one woman got up and got a white chip. This is how confused I was. And I looked and said, "Wait a minute, she had 7 years." And I looked at Barbara and I said, "You can drink again?" And then Justine hit me in the back of the head. She said, "No, if you drink, you will die." Okay, I sat back down. And then I was told to get up and go over there and hug her and tell her that I'm glad she made it back alive. Some of the people that I've gone to funerals, just, I thought that they worked the program better than me, just go out the doors and die, you know? One blew the brains out. But one thing that I've always noticed is they stopped going to meetings. You know? "Did you go to a meeting the day that you drank?" "No." I learned from them. And every time that I see somebody pick up a white chip that's come back in, I look in their eyes and I see death. Just a little bit grayer. Just a little bit grayer. A little bit grayer. One of my classmates, we came in about the same amount of time. She was for Savannah, and she hadn't gone to meetings in about a month or so. She hadn't called her sponsor. And she took off all of her clothes and swam in the ocean, and I never found her body. I don't know. This is the only path that I know. I thought, okay, I'm going to be an old-timer, 20 years or plus, you know? And it came and went, and I was like, "Oh, crap, okay, this is cool." I had foot surgery in 2015, a little bit more, and the back surgery, and then about a year and a half ago, I had shoulder surgery. They actually opened up my back. I cracked three vertebrae, and I slipped some discs, and I don't believe aspirin would have worked. And I didn't want to be awake for the surgery, okay? But my sponsor and I wrote down the sheet, I'm taking this medicine because I need it, not because I want to, you know? And just like the foot surgery, when they took off my big toe and put it back, I didn't want to be awake for that, not now, you know? And learning how to walk again, twice in sobriety, was interesting. I decided that I was going to go to college. Because the women started reading me the big book. I started, my first year, Laura T. gave me my first 12 and 12. She said, okay, now you can work, now you can, you know, read the 12 and 12. And I went to step studies. I learned about the steps. So I went to college. And I liked it so much, I went to college again. Got my bachelor's. And I liked it so much, I got my master's degree. And funny, I work on cars. And then I come from a family of teachers. My sister's like, well, why don't you teach? I remember me in high school. No. I taught in Barrow County, and I retired in Barrow County High School. And, I taught at that high school, at Appalachia High School. And I still talk to my buddies. And I retired. I thought, okay, this is cool. I just retired, go to AA meetings, hang out, stuff like that. I got bored. You know that worker among workers thing? A member of society? Yeah, I got bored. So I worked for a company for a little while. Turtle wrenches, and I said, yeah, I'm going to teach college. So now my father told me when I graduated from high school, he said, you know, college just isn't for you. You need to find a man. You need to get married, have babies, and be a housewife. I'm thinking, no. So I teach college. It's pretty cool because I'm the least likely person to ever teach college, and I teach students who are just like me. And that's what's so cool, you know. I learned that I learn differently. I have dyslexia and I have a couple other learning disabilities. And a while back, we came out with, I know that they have some in the back. It is a big book, but it's in plain print. And it's big enough where I can read it. And all of our literature is on PDF. I'll hook you up. But all of our literature is on PDF file. You can read it. But when they put that up, I was like, oh, my God. Wonderful. I mean, it's in big print, and I can read it, and it's wider. You know, it's like bigger than the older alcoholic. And I was like, why didn't they have that when God rendered me sober? Well, then I would have missed the miracle if these women gave me the big book. So it came when it came, you know. I have a bucket list that I've been, my sponsor told me to make a bucket list. So my bucket list was to be an old timer. My bucket list was to go to our state office down in Macon. You gotta go. You have got to go to our state office. They have a room that's an archives room, and it's temperature control, and you have to wear white gloves and mask. And you can, if you're into history, it is so cool to be there. You know, I've always been of service. I've always had a trusted server position, kind of looking for a prison meeting, you know, to go to, because I've always been jail meeting or prison meetings. The first time that I went to one, I was afraid that they might keep me. I just wasn't quite sure, you know. Wasn't quite sure. There could have been, you know, that. And one of my, before I retired from teaching, I taught down in Warner Robins, Middle Georgia. And I was teaching for a college, but I was contracted to the Georgia Department of Corrections. And they were residents. I was always called an inmate, but we were supposed to call them residents now that are getting ready to be released, and I taught them automotive. So that was pretty cool, too. But now, teaching at a private college, it's interesting. I had no idea. I mean, I got married, got divorced, nine years of marriage. I wish it would have worked out after a couple four steps. You know, my first couple four steps were pages and books, and now the longer that I stay sober, the shorter they get, you know. I mean, there's no and, if, but, well, cause and condition. I've only done the four step out of the big book. You know, I did one in Hazleton when I was in treatment. I remember question number 68, are you afraid of red-headed women? Should I be? I don't know. I mean, when I sat down for my first four step, it's like, my sponsor said, okay, this is what we're going to do. You know, and this, okay, who are you pissed off at? I'm like, ooh, this is cool. What'd they do? Ooh, I like this stuff. This is real good. And then I have to turn it, what's my part in it. My sponsor helps me see my part in it, because sometimes I can't see my part in it, you know. My mother passed away from cancer in 2016. I'd done that living amends, you know, gone over there once a week, you know, taking her shopping. God, I hate the malls, but I was trying to be a good daughter, just like trying to be a good sister, an aunt, a great aunt now, and a great aunt. Oh, God, I'm old. Okay. I was hanging out with my great grandniece, and she was like, gosh, you're so cool. I'm like, no, I'm so old. You know, but it's pretty cool. I mean, they asked me, age appropriate, all my nieces and nephews and all my relatives, depending on the age appropriate, you know. Some of them know, some of them have sat and heard my story. Others, they know, you know. But I was wondered in the back of my mind, you know, have I done everything on my side of the street with my mother? I mean, there was that 2 weeks there that disappeared. You know, it's not like I was all powerful, but I know I broke my mother's heart. I might even pop a hole or two in her soul. And I always wondered if she truly had forgiven me. Have I done everything? You know, because now we're just hanging out, you know. And I laid in the bed with her, and she told me to roll her over, so we rolled her over. And she told me that when I had about 15 or 16 years of sobriety, that she forgave me. And that she patted me on the leg and said, Mama just loves you so much, and I'm so proud of you. You've been sober all this time, which is pretty cool. And she left, and that was the end of the sentence. She got diagnosed, and 5 weeks later, she was gone, and I'm grateful. She didn't suffer. And the people in AA, again, surrounded me. It's okay, just don't drink. You don't have to be pissed at God. I'm not pissed. I wasn't mad at God. I was relieved, because I've known people that have had lung cancer and just, you know, have suffered. And my auntie, she passed away last year, and I was able to be there the last week or so. She decided that she wanted to pass away at home. So my brother and I did the midnight shift. And I've been around AAers that had taken their last breath, but this was different. This was my auntie, you know, the cool aunt, you know. When my mother and I weren't oil and vinegar, I'd hang out with my auntie, you know. She knows how to leave a room. She didn't suffer at all. And I'm so grateful to God that she didn't suffer. You know, she just breathed in and breathed out, and that was it. And her body got cold, and I kissed her forehead. And we're going to bury her next to my mom, because she said, I want to be buried next to my sister. I'm like, cool. You know, I go up there for Thanksgiving. This last Thanksgiving, I decided to do something totally different. Brought a rake and some seeds and stuff like that. Decided to spruce up my mom and my sister's grave, you know. And it wasn't like, oh, it was just, I wanted to spend time with them. I never imagined that I would care about anybody or anything. I never thought that I would be a teacher, an educator. Oh, my God. You know, I have a driver's license that's really mine, not yours, but mine. I have a checkbook, and I have credit cards that are mine, not yours. And I have checks that are actually mine, and all of them have the same address. And I'm like, and it's been that way for a while. And I don't write checks unless I have money. And I'm on a budget, you know. And I actually bought a car and I had, like, credit. My credit. Not yours, my credit. And I actually signed on the dotted line. I didn't sign your name, signed my name. And they gave me this car. And now that I'm oldish, that's what we're calling it, oldish. I'm 61. I actually have pretty good insurance. And I sponsor women who have been sober a long time. One of them just celebrated 30. Oh, she came in when she was 20, you know. If you're sitting here and you're thinking, you know, one white chip, yeah, you can do it. Sponsor did it. She's got 53 years. She's got an L on her chip, you know. I had no idea. I mean, I have shelter and food. Don't get me wrong. I had no idea that I could have this life. I sit in meetings and I listen to people, AA gave me back this, AA gave me back that, and I'm thinking, that's just beyond my comprehension. Because before AA, I didn't have a life. AA gave me one. This is my life. I like how God's got a sense of humor, but I like how God's planning it out. And I had no idea. I hope and I wish and I pray that if you're new in AA, that you come here, you get your cup of coffee, and you sit down. And don't let anybody take your seat, not even you. And I hope that AA has been as good to you as it has been to me. And it has been so good. I actually have a soul today. I actually care about things. I have a friend, a dear friend, he's going through something, just being able to sit there and be trusted. I have another friend, she's going through knee surgery. She asked me, hey, could you come over and hang out? I'm like, me? I mean, people want me around now. It's like, okay, now what do you want me to do? Now just taking care of them. I had no idea. And my sponsor keeps telling me, the best is yet to come. I mean, the promises have already come true. They've already folded in. They're already part of my soul. Rick and I were cracking up. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Yeah. They just don't tell me how many times it does. It does a lot. It does so much. In closing, I can't wait. I mean, I only have 39 years. And just to sit there and watch this woman with 53 years, I have no idea what she said, but the honesty and the rolling up of the sleeves, you know, and just the talking from the soul. One alcoholic talking to another. That's what it's all about. My home group is BBC. It's Bell, Book, and Candle. It's an old group. The bell, we used to go outside and ring the bell. Everybody was outside smoking. We used to smoke in meetings, by the way. The two non-smokers were over there in the corner, and the fans would blow that way. And then we always took our topic from the big book, and it was a candlelight meeting. So, but I'm changing home groups. I like to be a member of a home group, because I had a home bar, had a home group, that tried to follow the traditions. I think I found one here. It is Bridge Builders. It's like 11 o'clock and then Saturday and Sunday. It's at 11:30. What I get excited is, especially Sundays, you gotta come. The stack of papers here that are people that are mandated is so tall and it's so freaking awesome. I mean, it is just awesome. But thank you so much again for listening. Thank you. Thanks.
Do y'all not love that woman?
First I slip, and then I quit. To a hope-filled dream. You rescue me, and finally, waking there I see. I look in. Thank you. Make me wear the promises.